At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The Secretary of the Treasury, Scott Bessent, a remark that was blunt and candid and honest and straightforward in response to the announcement by Beijing that there would be export controls, a.k.a. restrictions, on rare earths. My understanding is 70% of the supply for rare earths around the world comes from the People's Republic of China. My understanding is that without those rare earths and the supply going out months and months and months, we're looking at an economy of Europe, an economy of the United States, and all our attendant partners grinding to a literal halt, because that is the fundamentals of our electronics. I'm speaking to you digitally. I fall silent without those rare earths. I welcome Elaine Dzensky, a senior director and head of the Center on Economic and Financial Power at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, writing a response to what happens next at the People's Republic of China. Mr. Bessent said, undiplomatically but candidly, their economy is going down, I paraphrase. They're in a recession depression, I quote. And they're trying to pull the rest of the world down with them. I quote. Elaine, a very good evening to you. Mr. Bessent has a reputation on Wall Street as trustworthy. He has a reputation in Washington as diplomatic. That was not a diplomatic remark. What's driving it? What's behind it? Have they reached their limits with the Chinese misbehavior? Good evening to you.
Hi, John. Great to be back. Yeah, it was a very candid comment, but it also happened to be true. At least from my perspective, the economic fundamentals in China right now are somewhat worrisome, to put it mildly. And it's a combination of a highly indebted property sector, high unemployment, particularly among the youth populations, a lot of foreign direct investment that has left China, and numerous other factors. So whether they're in a recession or a depression, I think you could make an argument either way. But his comment is telling, and it's reflective of how the alarms are now being raised, which I think is absolutely appropriate. But the temperature is also continuing to rise on this trade war. And, you know, we are in an economic moment that is unprecedented in the last 100 or so years, where systems are breaking. There's a reordering going on many different levels, and it's putting pressure on economies, but in particular China, because of the way that they are structured as an export-driven economy, and they're trying to maintain that export dominance for as long as they can. But one would argue perhaps to their own detriment. So there are a lot of shifting trends and dynamics here that are contributing to where we are. But I think to go back to your point about Scott Bessent, he's calling it like it is. And that's really important. In fact, it's arguably the most important step to get to a deeper conversation about where it is that we need to go when it comes to the U.S.-China relationship.
The World Trade Organization, the United States, I believe it was the Clinton administration and the Bush administration, opened the door to China. It was meant to bring prosperity to the Chinese people who'd suffered for decades, hundreds of years, abused by their leadership and by the circumstances. It did not work. Are we still stuck on that program that if we just wait a little longer, they'll be okay and they'll be just like us, up and up, just like Kansas City? Do we wait, Elaine?
Well, I think some fundamentals have kind of destroyed that illusion of what this industrialization of China has meant, and perhaps what we gave up in the process, which was the outsourcing of some manufacturing jobs to China, and ultimately the rise of that population in a way that, frankly, is not a bad thing. It's good to have economies moving along. The challenge is that the political dynamics have not moved in that direction. So to the extent that we thought that there was going to be political reform as a result of these economic reforms, I think we were mistaken. And now we have a situation where we're intertwined economically, but increasingly staring down a political adversary and a growing military adversary. And this is a combination of challenges that we didn't even face with the Soviets during the Cold War. So we didn't have that sort of economic integration like we do with China. So that is really the root of the problem. But it also is a reflection of how China has gone about establishing its trade engagement and its market orientation. And this is really important to understand. They are a non-market player in a free market environment. Okay, so what does that mean? It means that they're very good at using subsidies and other types of non-market practices, forced labor in some cases, and other mechanisms that basically corrode a free market environment. So it becomes very difficult to counter that. One cannot compete against that if one is a market-oriented firm. And so we have that challenge, and that's what we need to solve for. We need to push out the non-market practices. And the first step is to understand what they are.
You recommend a near global economy. What does that mean, Elaine?
The near global economy is the idea that we get back to the fundamentals of a free trade environment, which is characterized as free, stable, open, and transparent. And these are important tenets because markets work best in an environment where information can be freely exchanged, an environment where the rules are known and the rules are adhered to, and there are consequences if you don't. Right now, we think we're in a free trade, some sort of free trade environment, but that's not really the case because of the way that China is operating. So we need to get back to these fundamentals. And one of two things will happen. Either we will see China conform to a new set of rules, or we will see them break into a different system. That's a question that we need to be mindful of. But if we continue to stay in the space where we're not acknowledging the impact of those non-market practices, it's the worst of both worlds, because we're deluding ourselves into thinking that we're still operating in an environment where our firms can compete.
Elaine Dzensky is the senior director and head of the Center on Economic and Financial Power. I think Washington's following your idea, published in the New York Post. I think we've reached a point where hard decisions must be made about China as a member of the community of nations. I agree with you there, Elaine. The question is, what is to be done? To be continued.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.